fasten your seatbelt, turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Winter's over and the snow is gone. Go get your gloves and pull your work boots on. Gotta clear that patch, pick them stones. You know the sun is gonna warm those lazy bones. Winter's over and the work's to start. Time to get busy in the family garden. Turning the soil and planting the seeds. Laying down mulch and pulling up weeds. Mowing the corn, row on row. Then you stand right back and you watch it grow. Know even little children gotta do their part in helping it to grow.
I'm Glenn Moberg. Today on Route 51, we leave the highway and head to the backyard. And that much-loved and carefully tended patch of dirt, compost, and topsoil that will occupy many of us through this Memorial Day weekend and then throughout the summer, where if we're lucky, the rich humus turned by a sharp spade will produce seedlings, then tall plants, and finally a bounty at harvest time. It will take some luck this year with a snowstorm and a hard freeze on May 7th, followed by record-breaking 90-degree heat just a few days later. This, after all, is North Central Wisconsin. And for the next hour, we're featuring a garden talk show just for those of us who live in this unforgiving subarctic climate. Our guest again this year, the always informative and entertaining David Ryle of the Jung Seed and Garden Center on Highway 10 in Stevens Point. David is here to answer all your questions about all the living things in your yard. From the vegetables and flowers you're trying to grow, to the shrubs and trees you've planted, to the raspberry, blueberry, and grapevines you've got on the side of the house, to pest control and fertilizer and any questions you may have, because this is Garden Talk just for you, the Northern Gardener, the landscaper, and the homeowner. So don't be shy. David is here to answer all of your questions, so get in now while we still have lines open. We have three of them open right now at 261-6371 if you're in the Wausau area. That's 261-6371 in the Wausau area, or toll-free anywhere you're listening at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. David, good to have you back with us again, my friend. We do this once every year. This has been some May. The central Wisconsin ginseng crop has been declared a disaster because of the late snowstorm.
I was going to say, yeah.
How bad did it affect other plants, bushes, and trees?
Well, the things that really got caught short were plants that were, because of how warm it's been during April, had really advanced their growth. And I'm thinking in particular of fruit crops, grapes. A lot of grapes were badly nipped. A lot of that first tendril growth was very, very soft indeed. And we've heard stories of people's grapes being nipped all the way back to the main cane. So anything that was advancing prematurely as a result of April's beautiful weather really took a beating when we got round to that week.
How about the impact on flowering trees and fruit trees? I know I had some apple trees and crab apples that were already I got some beautiful pictures of blossoms covered with snow, and I'm wondering how they're going to fare come fall.
Snow in and of itself, as I'm sure you know, is an insulator. To some extent, it actually can insulate. I don't worry so much about snow. I do worry about freeze. I worry about temperatures dropping to 32 degrees and below. That's when you start seeing some real problems. And depending on where the plant was in its pollination cycle, if the plant had already been pollinated, if the flowers had already been pollinated, the fruit were already set, even though they were very small, in likelihood, you're still going to get a crop. Some of it will be affected to some degree, but as to what degree, that's hard to tell at this point. However, if it was a slightly later variety that was right in the process of those flowers, you know, developing to the point of pollination capability, a lot of that will have already been lost.
What did this weather that we had in May, what did it do to your business at the Garden Center? I imagine a lot of people just kind of threw up their hands and gave up, at least for a while.
It's been a very tough May, I think, across the northern tier for all garden centers. You know, this kind of weather, it makes everybody step back a second and think, hey, what are we doing here? And so, yeah, it hasn't been a fun May for the garden centers. April was fantastic. May was very much the opposite.
Do you have a good selection still of plants that survived the weather and that are ready to go? I imagine you do because a lot of what you grow is indoors in greenhouses.
A lot of what we grow is indoors in greenhouses and is protected. Some of our nursery stock, even though it's hardy where we live, where we grow it, where we sell it, is often grown in southern tier states so we can have it ready at a good condition a little bit earlier than it would be naturally. And so a lot of that stock hadn't even yet been delivered, and as a result it missed the freeze. So we've actually got a really nice looking yard, full, absolutely full, you name it, we've got it right now. So and now you've got plenty of time. Now, you know, the thing is, there aren't many advantages to planting prematurely. With only a handful of things, there really are few advantages to doing so. You need your soil temperatures to be up to a certain level for plants to take the benefit from it. So planting prematurely really doesn't help you. I've told customers for a very long time now that, you know, you think you have an advantage planting your tomato plants out in mid-May or your pepper plants out in, you know, mid-May, mid-late May. The reality is, unless you're certain your soil is of a certain temperature, in some cases, you can actually knock your plants back, or in the case certainly of peppers, which are very temperature sensitive, they can literally lose a proportion of the potential yield of that particular plant as a result of the shock they'll suffer because the soil wasn't warm enough.
Now, I've heard that tomatoes, or as you say, tomatoes, actually need temperatures close to 70 degrees in the soil.
They really do. That is not hearsay. They really, really benefit from a soil temperature beyond 68 degrees. And peppers want it to be 70 plus. So they're really, you know, you really need to think about that. Sand silt, okay, it warms up pretty rapidly, thankfully. And if you live in the Stevens Point area, of course, we've got very sandy soils. And I can understand people thinking, well, you know, we can plant that much earlier because it is warming up a little bit. In normal years, it still wouldn't be warmed enough. If you were in a clay soil, I would say don't for any reason plant out prematurely. Not for any reason. Even if you have to leave those plants in their containers till mid-June, do so.
Now we've had, of course, a string of 90-degree weather just a few days after that snowstorm and the hard freeze. Does that kind of temperature variability put extra stress on vegetable plants?
Most temperate plants are comfortable in the low 80s. Once we go beyond that, you really do increase the stress level exponentially. The plants begin to transpirate, lose water through their stomach much more rapidly. Their ability to draw it up may be compromised because they may not yet have a fully developed root system. And so, yeah, there is an area there where you really need to watch it and watch it carefully, particularly if you're planting out bare rootstock. If you plant it out, let's say, in the first week of May, it's something you need to think about. These plants don't have a developed root system, so make sure that they have sufficient water, because if you don't, you could really pay a hard price for it within, you know, 24, 48 hours.
Do you have any other tips for all the people who are going to be out planting their gardens this weekend?
Make sure your soil is well worked up. Take the time to do a pH test. Not enough people test their soils and know exactly what's going on there. They just don't know. I've heard for years people just routinely putting down lime. I have to put lime on my garden. Why do you have to put lime on my garden? Well, I've always done it. Well, that's not a reason to do it. If a pH test doesn't indicate to you that there is something wrong with the pH, think carefully before you start placing chemicals on that soil that will fundamentally affect it.
How do you do that? How does a pH test work for those of us who have never done it?
Very, very simple. Most of them are liquid tests. Take a small sample of soil. You put it into a test tube. You add a specific reagent. You add water. You shake it together for about 30 seconds, then let it stand for about half an hour and read the color of the liquid against a chart, which typically will come with the testing kit.
But different plants prefer different pHs, don't they?
There are a small group of plants that have a very definite specific need for instance, low very low pH. Good examples of those are blueberries, rhododendrons, azaleas.
Okay.
These plants all want a very low pH. We call them ericaceous, acid-loving plants. There are others that really are not quite so demanding. They still prefer pH to be a little bit lower than 7. 7 is neutral. The reality is that most plants we grow in the garden, however, are happy in a soil between 6.7 and 7.2. So slightly acidic to just slightly above neutral.
But it sounds like you really want to take care of the acidic nature of the soil if you're planning on growing blueberries or rhododendrons.
You really need to. It's vital that you understand these plants have a very different root system, first of all. Their ability to take up nutrients, both micro and macro, are dependent upon that pH being in a particular range. With those, for instance, blueberries, you need a pH to be between 4 and 4.5. That's unusually acid.
Wow.
Very acid indeed. But that's necessary for these plants.
Where should you plant blueberries?
Well, you can plant them anywhere. It's the preparation of the site that is key. You have to know that blueberries want a high degree of humic acid in the soil. They want a lot of humus. They want that low pH. If your soil is very, very sandy or very, very clay for that matter, you need to remove a portion of it and bring in a large amount of peat. Incorporate that peat into that site. Run a pH test. See where you're standing. You may have to amend it with sulfur or aluminum sulfate. Either one of those will drop pH. And from then on, you can decide exactly whether you're ready to go or whether you need to continue making amendments.
Okay. David Ryle of the Jung Garden Center. This is your show, folks. If you've got questions about the garden you're planting, or if you've got fruit trees or evergreens, any ornamental trees, David is the guy who's got the answers to your questions, and we've got him on every year at this time just for those of us who are trying to make our yards look nice, trying to get things looking good in these inclement northern climates. So give us a call at 1-800-780-9742, toll-free anywhere you're listening. That's 1-800-780-9742, or if you're in the Wausau area, 261-6371. That's 261-6371. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network, and we will be back after this short break.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning and out in the garden, get your rifle and don't get hardened. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them is a culinary bummer. I forgot all about the sweating and the digging. Every time I go out and pick me a biggin'.
Homegrown tomatoes, what would life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love, homegrown tomatoes.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Our guest, David Ryle of the Jung Garden Center in Stevens Point, answering your gardening questions. Let's go right to the phones. We have Nathan. You're on Route 51. Hello, Nathan.
Hi, I'm just calling about how you grow hops.
David, how do you grow hops?
Well-drained, deeply fertile soil. They're not particularly fussy. They want an open site. They need to be planted in a very sunny, really open site. What's important with a hop is to bear in mind just how big it becomes. You're talking about a very, very big plant indeed in a single season.
And where can you get hops? Do you get hop seeds, or do you have to go to a...
No, most of the time it's going to be plants. It's what we sell here in the store during bear root season. They're available from a variety of sources, but no, it's not. They're not going to be available from seed. What you would get from seed would be completely mixed in terms of the characteristics of the plants. If you're growing hops specifically for beer production, for using the hop flowers... you'll need a specific variety to achieve a specific characteristic in the beer.
Okay, and hops are available apparently, not just to cultivators who sell to industrial brewers, but
we sell a tremendous number of hops right here in the Stevens Point store.
No kidding.
This year we went through a little under 700.
700 hops plants?
700 hops plants.
Is that, is that unusual? Is that something that's changed through the years? Is there more demand?
I think it's more people are a little more adventurous about growing some of these things. And, you know, if they, they're hobbyists, you know, they produce their own beer, it's natural, I guess, that after a while they want to handle the whole process from beginning to end. And so, you know, hops, an essential part of beer, no matter what kind of beer you drink. And so, yeah, I understand why they'd want that. We carry everything from the Fuggles, which are the types used for ales, all the way through to the types that would be used for standard lagers or pilsners.
Well, you learn something new every day. It's Garden Talk, just for our inclement northern climate. David Ryle of the Jung Seed Company taking your calls at 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Lisa in Phillips. Lisa, you're on Route 51. Hello, Lisa.
Hi. I have a black walnut tree in my yard, and I'm having a hard time getting any shrubs to grow near it. I've tried hydrangea, and it seems to kill them out. Is there something that I can...
Well, tell me, Lisa, how big, let's just think from the ground up, go up about 3 feet, how big would you say is the diameter of the trunk?
Oh, about 12 inches.
Well, here's the reason why you can't get much to grow underneath that walnut. Walnut roots produce a chemical called juglone. As the plant grows in age, develops in maturity, it produces more and more of this chemical, which builds up in concentration in the soil immediately in that area. That chemical is poisonous to virtually every other plant. There's only a small number of plants that aren't responsive to the chemical, and as a result, it typically prevents you from growing just about anything in the immediate area.
So I guess, Lisa, the question is, can you grow things somewhere removed from the black walnut, or how much do you like that black walnut tree?
I guess the black walnut's going to stay, so.
Well, there you go. How far away do you have to plant something from a walnut tree, David?
Look at the drip line of the tree. Literally look at where the drip line is of the tree. And remember, that's the, if you think about it, that's at the circumference of the tree, the circumference of the branches. Look at that, look down, go out about another 4 feet away from that, and right there is where you can start planting.
All right. Lisa, thanks for your call. I feel for you. I used to have a couple of black walnuts in my backyard and in the place I lived before, and I loved them. They're beautiful trees.
Well,
they are.
You know, Lisa, there is another... There is kind of a silver lining to this. Of course, that walnut of yours is probably worth some money now at 12 inches in diameter. You know, the wood is used for furniture and gun stocks and all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. And great walnuts.
And great walnuts too.
Yeah, yeah.
They are a pain to clean though.
Yes,
they are. I've seen many a finger.
Lisa, thanks so much for the phone call. 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Gene in Almond. Gene, you're on Route 51 talking to David Ryle.
Good afternoon. Recently, on Tuesday, I had an infestation of tent caterpillars in my blueberries, and I treated them with Bacillus thuringiensis.
Yep.
And that got rid of the little worms. But I'm wondering, will the berry plants themselves put out new leaves?
They will.
I know some trees will from time to time.
They will. Don't worry. I realize when you see that it's somewhat disfiguring. But typically the plants will throw a second set of foliage this early in the season.
Okay, great. And I have another question that has to do with walnuts. I do sculpture, and right now I'm working in walnut. And I'm wondering, can I take the chips and shavings, and will anything leach out of those that will inhibit growth of plants?
Yes.
I'm sorry, yes?
Yes. Okay. The chemical will actually leach out, depending on the concentration of how much you've got with regards to chips.
Right.
I really wouldn't recommend that you apply it to the soil or you apply it as a mulch to the surface of the soil.
Okay, except, say, on a walking path where we really don't want any weeds.
And that would be
up.
Great. Yeah, putting it there would be fine.
Okay, thank you.
You're all welcome.
Right. Gene, thanks so much for the phone call. David Ryle of the Jung Seed Company, 1-800-780-9742. We've got time for one more call before our news break. Let's go to Lod in Hazelhurst. Lod, you're on Route 51.
Yeah, see, is there anything you can do to keep chipmunks out of your garden?
Oh, boy. Well, I guess the trite answer to that would be have a couple of cats.
A couple of cats?
Yeah. You know, they tend to keep the numbers down very nicely. At least I know in my home, my wife's little feline seems to become a particularly avid killer of chipmunks. There's usually one stretched out in the sunroom every morning. Chemically, you can try using capsicum sprays on plants. Most animals will not eat plants that have been sprayed with hot pepper. The reality is, apart from human beings that enjoy the sensation, for most animals, unless they've evolved actually having peppers as part of their food, the experience is a very unpleasant one, a very painful one. And so the animals will typically stay away from these plants that have been treated with this kind of chemical or smells like they've been treated with this kind of chemical after they've had one or two experiences with it. So a capsicum spray is probably chemically the most effective control that I could suggest. Using things like liquid fence, pepper sprays, or a combination of those usually offers some degree of control.
Okay.
All right, Lod, thanks so much for the phone call. We are talking to David Ryle of the Jung Garden Center in Stevens Point. This is a garden talk show just for those of us who have to labor in the subarctic climate of north central Wisconsin. We're taking your calls at 1-800-780-9742. We'll be back after this news.
Supporters of WPR include Animal Dentistry and Oral Surgery Specialists, LLC of Milwaukee and Oshkosh, a veterinary specialist working with pet owners and their veterinarians, providing dental and oral disease care for pets. Online at mypetsdentist.com.
Yes, you like potato, and I like potato. You like tomato, I like tomato. Potato, potato, tomato. Tomato.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Oh, yes. You like potato.
And you like potato.
You like tomato.
And you like tomato.
Potato.
Potato.
Tomato.
Tomato.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Well, I say tomato, and my guest, David Ryle of the Jung Garden Center, says tomato. But however you pronounce it, he's got the advice for those of us who are gardening or trying to grow trees or shrubs and various landscape plants in this inclement northern climate. 1-800-780-9742. 1-800-780-9742. It's a garden talk show just for north central Wisconsin. David, any new varieties of garden vegetables that you're particularly keen on this year?
Well, cucumbers have always been popular in the garden. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And people want cukes for all kinds of purposes, both eating fresh as well as for pickling purposes. There's a new one out now, very disease-resistant, called Diamant. D-I-E-M-A-N-T. Don't require a pollinator to set fruit, parthenocarpic. Highly resistant to downy and powdery mildew. Very, very nice variety. Heavy bearing, very reliable.
How about summer squash, zucchini, yellow squash? I like to grow those because I seem to get them no matter how much I abuse the plants.
Highly tolerant of just about anybody. There is a new variety of hybrid zucchini called Buckingham. Buckingham is unique in that it's a true bush type and very compact. You can grow a good crop of zucchini in a 12-inch pot with this plant. So a very, very petite plant, but highly productive.
And, of course, growing in containers is an option for those of us who don't have a lot of space.
Well, that's it, yep.
You know that I'm going to ask you about new varieties of tomatoes, as you would say.
Yeah,
I was
waiting for it, and I'm truly sorry, but this year there really are no new varieties per se. We have a couple of oldies that are you know, coming up again. Granddaddy, which is a Jung favorite, has been for a long time. Very popular. Always has been, I think always will be. A good producer, solid quality fruit. What you think of as a traditional beefsteak type tomato.
And I have noticed that there are more and more heirloom tomato and pepper plants available all the time.
There are.
Plants, not just seeds.
Yep.
Things that you used to have to grow from seed, now you can get as full-grown plants at the garden center.
Well, the commercial growers have paid attention to what the public have really asked for, what they've said they're interested in. You know, the public tells us we like the idea of growing heirloom varietals. We want to be able to grow those plants in our garden. And so, as always, the growers will respond to what it is the public are asking for.
What's the pluses and the minuses of growing an heirloom?
Oh, boy. Well, the pluses. The pluses are a unique fruit, regardless whether it be a pepper or a tomato or regardless what you're talking about. An heirloom vegetable or fruit is something that you can trace back in time. It's stood the test of time. It's gone through everything you can think of, and it's still there. It's still surviving. It's still producing. It says a lot for it. A plant that's been around for 100 years or more and is still popular, that says an awful lot about the plant's ability to satisfy a particular need. So that, for me, is one of the strongest pluses of heirlooms. One of the negatives, and I'll stay with tomatoes, perhaps it's a negative, perhaps it's not, depends on your point of view. Most heirloom varietals of tomatoes tend to be indeterminate. And what that means is that unless you pinch out the growing tip, the plant will keep on growing vertically and growing and growing and growing.
It'll take over all of the space you've got available.
It really will. So you really do need to stay on top of pinching that plant, removing excess side shoots, you know, to make sure the plant can give of its best.
And, of course, some of the hybrid varieties have more disease resistance.
That's the other factor that's typically there. They have more disease resistance, but don't discount the heirlooms. Any plant that's been able to survive this long says something about its ability to survive diseases. Bear that in mind. I mean, you cannot presume that because they're highly developed modern hybrids that they will always outperform on a disease basis the heirloom varietals. That's not always the case. We tend to presume that, but it's not necessarily true.
Interesting. David Ryle of the Jung Garden Center. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51. It's Garden Talk, just for those of us who live in north central Wisconsin. And let's go up north next to Frank in Arborvita. Frank, you're on Route 51.
Good day, gentlemen.
Hello.
I have a question regarding parsnips and carrots.
Mm-hmm.
I grow them, but I sure grow a lot of misshapen roots, and I don't know why.
Tell me about your soil preparation before you sow your seed.
Well, my soil is sandy loam.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a fair amount of old organic in it.
When you say it's old organic, is that you've applied?
Oh, yes, years ago.
Okay. But how about just before you sow your seed? I mean,
No, I haven't done that in the last few years.
Okay.
And according to my soil analysis, I use a bit of winterizer,
mm-hmm.
Lawn winterizer, which is, you know, nitrogen and potash
NPK.
Primarily, because the phosphate is high.
Right.
So what makes these lousy roots?
The most common reason that you find what I always call Frankenstein carrots. You know,
good
with
idea.
With the little nodules and
well,
they look like they've come out of Frankenstein's kitchen.
At the top, and then you get some three or four little stinker roots coming out of
yep,
it.
Yep, there you go. The most common reason for that is that the soil in which you are sowing your root crops is too high in organic matter.
Oh.
In particular, carrots, they really want a sandy silt loam, which is relatively free-draining, but rather low in organic matter.
Well, Frank, maybe you've been spoiling your plants.
You really have been.
Hmm.
But parsnips. Now, talk about a challenge. You want to talk to me about a challenge? Of all the vegetables you could handle in the garden, in my opinion, I would say parsnips are probably at the top of the tree when it comes to problems, difficulties in growing it to perfection. It's a very hard crop to produce high-quality parsnips. They want cool summer conditions. They want a deep root run. They want a soil that's relatively low in organic matter. They need flawless attention to irrigation. They are not an easy crop. Another one that's pretty tough, by the way, there's two of them. I'd say the king and the queen, when it comes to the problems of quality, are going to be parsnips and celery. Those two. If you can grow those two to perfection, you can sit back and smile while everybody just nods to you, because you are definitely a master grower.
I haven't tried celery.
But trust me, parsnips, they're a challenging crop for anybody who grows them.
So, Frank, maybe you should put more sand in your soil, it sounds like.
Maybe so. Okay, right. Well, I got what I got, I guess, and we'll live with it as best we can.
If you have another site somewhere in the garden which hasn't been as well managed with the additions of compost, that might be a better choice.
Okay, I could probably do that. Okay, thank you.
Frank, thanks so much for the call. 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. We've got David Royal of the Jung Garden Center with us giving advice for northern gardeners. Let's go to Barb next. Barb, you're on Route 51.
Hi. You had somebody call in earlier, and you were saying to use the hot pepper for the chippies. They'll eat right through it. They did chewed the door frame on our house. I found the thing to catch them, though, is to get the black plastic rat traps, bait them with a little peanut butter, kills them right away, and you don't have to worry about chippies anymore.
And that's another way to go.
Yeah. And the gentleman that just called with the carrots, one of the fellows from the farmer's market in Eagle River told me a couple of years ago I didn't have enough potash in my soil. Last several years, I've been emptying the fireplace ash into my root garden. My carrots are doing great now.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah. And we live near arborvitae, so that may help him, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, there you go. Barb, thanks so much. We're talking to David Ryle of the Jung Garden Center. Advice for gardeners in our northern climate, advice for those of you who are trying to plant trees and bushes. Maybe you have questions about pruning, about landscaping, about fertilizing, pesticides. David is here for another 15 minutes to take your calls, and our phone lines are wide open right now. 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Anywhere you're listening, or if you're in the Wausau area, 261-6371. That's 261-6371. Let's take a short break. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, and we will be back with more after we tiptoe through the tulips. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Our guest, David Ryle of the Jung Garden Center in Stevens Point. Let's go right back to the phones. We have Paul in Wausau. Paul, you're on Route 51.
Hi, David. Hi, Glenn.
Hello.
Hello, Paul.
I have a question for you about a red currant bush that I had last summer. I've got about five or six black currants, red currants, and some gooseberries.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the red currants last summer leafed out fine. Flowered, and then all of the leaves turned yellow, turned brown, and dropped off. And this spring, when I went out and checked on it, all of the wood was dead. So I started pruning it back to the ground, and I wasn't going to put another currant in there because I didn't know what caused it.
Sure.
But I noticed a shoot coming up from the ground. I'm just curious if you have any thoughts. What would...
As to why that happened?
Yeah. And it's about a five-year-old.
I mean, these plants are evenly irrigated. Your soil, sandy, loamy, clay, what is it?
It's here in Wausau, sandy loam.
Sandy loam.
And it was right next to a jostaberry bush that has done just fine.
Yeah. Well, I have the same issues every now and again. I live on sand silt. And, you know, every so often, especially during a warm period, if I haven't watered enough, I'll have a plant that will do the exact same thing. It'll just, for some reason, collapse. You'll have all the foliage drop off. It doesn't finish fruiting out, and you think it's gone. And then the following year, from the stump, here's fresh shoots arising.
Huh.
So it seems to be a water issue, or at least in my experience, it's been that. Providing the plants are receiving equal levels of nutrition, I would say the culprit is more than likely to be a water shortage.
Oh, but well,
this particular plant was water sensitive, didn't get enough, and this is his reaction to it.
Okay, well, that makes sense and allays my fears for a spread or a relapse this year.
Yeah, just watch your water. You know, I'm the same way. I am out there, but you know, you're busy with work, one thing and another. You forget, you don't have enough time. Maybe one just doesn't get as much as the other one, and for whatever reason, it seems to tip the scale, and here we go again.
And all of a sudden, a collapse. And I did, you know, I did ramp up on the watering when I noticed because I thought that might have been it, but
right.
It was too late, maybe.
Well, that's it. You're basically, you know, you're shutting the barn door, and the horse is already over the hill.
Yeah, I was puzzled because I searched online for solutions, and I checked the stems for borer holes, and
yeah, that's not usually the problem with them. They're fairly self-supporting. They don't come down with too many diseases. Rust is occasionally an issue, especially if you're growing near pines. But beyond that, usually they'll take care of themselves.
Well, excellent. I'll have to baby this one and make sure that root system sends up a nice, healthy bush.
There you go.
All righty.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Paul, thanks so much for the phone call. 1-800-780-9742. It's Garden Talk for our Northern Climes with David Ryle of the Jung Garden Center. Let's go to Kathy, who has a question about apple trees. Hello, Kathy.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. A while ago...
Kathy, you need to speak up. We've got kind of a lousy connection with you.
Okay. A while ago on Friday, Larry Mueller's Garden Show, a gentleman from Jung's was on, and there was a gentleman from Algoma that called in with an apple tree problem,
mm-hmm.
and it was blossoming. And he said, he went through and in great detail explained, you know, we have to stress the tree.
Right.
And then the gentleman said, well, some old-timer had told him to hit the tree with a baseball bat, and the gentleman from Jung said, yes, that could be done in mid-June.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how many times do I hit the tree because I've got the same problem.
Okay.
Maybe it depends on how frustrated you are.
Well, I was going to say, the thing is, don't go nuts. What you're trying to do, this is what the science is behind what it is you're physically doing. When you strike the tree with something hard like a baseball bat, what happens is you crush the cambium and phloem layer that's right underneath the bark. That's the cells that transfer water and nutrients up and down the trunk. As a result of causing an interruption, as a damage, a bruising of those cells, the plant basically starts to think it may be going to die, and so it needs to go into adult phase. It needs to go into reproductive phase because every plant's primary function is to reproduce its own kind. So you're kind of tricking the tree into growing up.
Yeah, okay. I need to trick my tree.
So smacking the tree 6 or 7 times all the way around the circumference of the tree in different places should cause enough bruising to make the tree think, okay, I got to, you know, produce apples before I die.
Okay. I just needed to know how much
I always say trees that are doing this are suffering from acute Peter Pan-itis, a distinct desire not to grow up.
Yeah, he's just humming along here, just comfortable, thinking this is just fine, but I'm not getting any apples.
You're not getting anything from it. We still don't really know why trees will do this. You know, you can get 100 of the same cultivar planted, all of which, 99% of them, will start producing apples right on cue, and you'll get that odd one that just, no, thank you, not doing it.
Yeah, and that's what I've got. I got one, a beautiful Cortland, looks
yep.
great, but no blossoms.
No
right.
blossoms.
6 or 7 times, Kathy. Thanks so much for the call.
All right, thank you.
Let's go back to the phones, and let's go to Joan now. Joan, you're on Route 51. Hello, Joan.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well.
I have 2 questions. So which would you rather answer, one about a butternut tree or cedar trees?
Well, ask them real quick, and we'll see if we can get to both of them.
I have a butternut tree. I got it as a seedling for my brother. about 80 miles south of Park Falls.
Mm-hmm.
But they're doing very good. Except one has, it looks like, a white mold on the trunk. It's very hard. The tree itself is not soft in that area. And I took a Q-tip and put a little bleach on it,
mm-hmm.
and it turned that thing brown, but I hate to, like, bleach the tree.
I think what you're seeing, I mean, without physically seeing it, I think what you're actually seeing is what you call lichen or lichen. Which,
it's
how do you pronounce
smooth.
It? Do you pronounce
it? It almost looks like a white mushroom mold on it. Yeah, okay.
There's two things about this. If what it is I'm diagnosing is correct, it's one is a good thing because lichens typically only grow where the air quality is very, very good. So
okay.
Where you're living, your air is really good.
Yay.
It's pretty easily controlled. They don't like sulfur. They don't like sulfur dioxide. They don't like anything sulfur in the atmosphere. Actually, more than 2 parts per million typically is injurious to those kind of plants.
Okay.
So you can do several things. You can apply a little bit of powdered sulfur, dustable sulfur we use for fungicides.
Uh-huh.
That will typically do them in pretty rapidly. You can sprinkle that on. Your sodium hypochlorite, which was your Clorox bleach, providing it's no stronger than about 10 to 15%,
okay.
Shouldn't injure the tree at all, and that will also achieve probably the same effect.
Oh, okay. All right, and then quickly, my cedar trees.
Yeah.
I have a row of them in front of the house, about 10 feet off the road. There's 18 of them, and in the middle of the bunch, they're dying. I have put calcium on them. I've gotten evergreen food for them, and the ones around them are like, ooh, yay, happy, and they're growing, and it's these two or three stinkers that are not together. It's like a good tree, bad tree, good tree, bad tree.
Yeah, why does that happen?
Just,
why is it always going to be in the middle of the row? Why can't it be on the end of the row?
It's
convenient. It's
like,
David, let's give Joan a 30-second answer here so I can squeeze in one more phone call.
Sure. The reason the plant's doing that is hard to tell. It could be from a variety of reasons. If they're planted too close together, the plants will compete with each other for water and nutrients. And, you know, nature's laws are quite simple. The strongest shall thrive and the weakest shall demise. So that could be one reason. If there is any salt being thrown or anything like that, there's a chance that, odd plants will be affected more than other plants. Without seeing the site, it's kind of hard to give you an absolute answer.
Well, see, the odd thing is, on the roadside, where, of course, the county does like to throw salt,
mm-hmm.
that's fine.
They're doing fine.
On the yard side is where they are turning brown and crispy.
Joan, I'll tell you what. You can reach David at the Jung Garden Center at 715-341-8939. That's 341-8939. Why don't you give him a buzz after the show? And
okay, can I find it on the website? On the Jung website?
You mean the answer?
No, you.
Me? No, you won't find me on the website, but the phone number you've just been given, yes, you can reach me there.
Okay, give it to me one more time real quick.
715-341-8939.
Thank you so much.
All right, thanks, Joan. One more call. We've got Ed in Portage. Hello, Ed.
Yeah, I live in a very sandy soil area, and I've got two trees, one being a locust, one being a silver maple. And there's, after like 10 years now, they're starting to develop pretty good-sized roots at mm-hmm. ground level. I'm wanting to know how to deal with them. Just running right underneath the
trees. Trees with surface roots.
Yeah. Yep. You know, these are really anchor roots. That's what's forming at the bole of the tree. These are the roots that basically secure the tree to the soil. The ends of the roots will search down into the soil mass for water and nutrients. It's kind of hard to do anything with them, per se. You can surgically remove them close to the trunk when the trees are dormant. It's quite a job, quite a difficult job to do. That's really the only thing you can do if they're being a nuisance or they're getting in the way of equipment or whatever. You know, you wait till October or at the very end of winter, and basically you dig a soil trench on either side of the offending root, cut the root off, remove it, and refill that area with fresh soil.
Okay, would I have the ability to just put more dirt over top of it in my yard? I could do that. Will they surface again?
They will.
They will. Okay.
Yeah. Especially in sand silt.
Ed, we got to run. I'm sorry, we're completely out of time.
Thanks a lot.
And we do want to thank today's guest, David Ryle, General Manager of the Jung Seed and Garden Center on Highway 10 in Stevens Point. If you didn't get your question answered on the radio today, you can reach David and his staff at the Garden Center at 715-341-8939. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Mary Baldwin. Special music today by John McCutcheon, Tom T. Hall, Eric Clapton, Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald, Tiny Tim and Arlo Guthrie. Next week, we go from the garden to fishing tips with the legendary guide, lure designer, television personality, and blues man, Joe Bucher. Joe will be our guest for the entire hour next Thursday at 5, right here on Route 51. Thanks again for riding with us today. Until next week, we're heading out of town.
Find my way in nature's chain. Tune my body and my brain.